ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 17, 6 and 7, we'll just read through 6, I believe. Okay, verses 6 is, Chitraketur uvacha isha loka guru shakshad dharmam vyakta shariranam haste mukhya shabhayam vai mitani bhuya bhayaya. Chapter, text 7. Jata daras tivra tapa brahma vadi shabhapati Kikritya Shriyam Kichaste Katari Prakrita Yata Chatadara Stivratapa Brahma Vadi Shabhapati Ankirkrita Shriyam Chaste Katari Prakrita Yata Chatadarastivratapa Ramavade Sabhapati Akikrita Shiram Chaste Katari Prakrita Yata Chatadara, keeping matted locks of hair. Tivratapa, highly elevated, due to undergoing fierce austerities and penances. Brahmavadi, of strict followers of Vedic principles. Sabhapati, the president of an assembly. Anki Kritya, embracing. Shriyam, a woman. Cha, and Aste, sits. Katahri, without shame. Prakrita, a person conditioned by material nature. Yata, just as. Translation. Lord Shiva, whose hair is matted on his head, has certainly undergone great austerities and penances. Indeed, he is the president in an assembly of strict followers of Vedic principles. Nonetheless, he is seated with his wife on his lap in the midst of saintly persons and is embracing her as if he were a shameless, ordinary human being. Please repeat. Lord Shiva, whose hair is matted on his head, has certainly undergone great austerities and penances. Indeed, he is the president in the assembly of strict followers of Vedic principles. Nonetheless, he is seated with his wife on his lap in the midst of saintly persons and is embracing her as if he were a shameless, ordinary human being. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Chitraketu appreciated the exalted position of Lord Shiva, and therefore he remarked at how wonderful it was that Lord Shiva was acting like an ordinary person. He appreciated Lord Shiva's position, but when he saw Lord Shiva sitting in the midst of saintly persons and acting like a shameless, ordinary man, he was astonished. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that although Chitraketu criticized Lord Shiva, he did not offend Lord Shiva like Daksha. Daksha considered Lord Shiva insignificant, but Chitraketu expressed his wonder at Lord Shiva's being situated in that way. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Vinitam Jnana Tasmi Sri Guruve Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Svapitam Jaina Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabhrantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Siyuta Parakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitantam Sajivam Saddaitam Sarvadhutam Parajana Sahitam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Param Sahagana Lita Shiva Shakamutamscha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandha Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kantara Rakandu Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Brindamaneshwari Virushabhana Sate Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Pancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnava Vyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Garadhar Srivasari Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Lord Shiva, whose hair is matted on his head, certainly had undergone great austerities and penances. Indeed, he is the president in the assembly of strict followers of Vedic principles. Nonetheless, he is seated with his wife on his lap in the midst of saintly persons and embracing her as if he were a shameless, ordinary being. So it's described by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that Chitraketu actually had no intent in insulting Lord Shiva. He was actually thinking of social etiquette. In his mind, it's even mentioned in this verse that Lord Shiva, having matted hair, which is a symbol of someone who's done great penance and austerity and can control his senses, was a very exalted personality. So he was wondering how it was that in that assembly, when even though between a man and wife there's nothing wrong in the privacy of the home exchanging affection, that in the assembly of saintly people, how that was going on. So he was thinking actually for the benefit for people that might observe that. He was not in his own mind thinking that Lord Shiva was at fault. Nor did Lord Shiva take offense. Because he could understand Chitraketu's mind. So, and we'll see in later verses, Lord Shiva was simply smiling because he could understand that this appears that Lord Shiva is transgressing social etiquette. So Chitraketu's thought was not that it was the fault of Lord Shiva, but he was thinking that other people, if they saw that, not understanding Lord Shiva's position, might criticize him. So he was fearful for other people that didn't have the same realization that he did, that they might get themselves into trouble. So observing this was his thought. So there was nothing wrong with him observing that this was this transgression of social etiquette. But to speak this was another thing. So it is described that later that Chitraketu had gotten the blessings of Lord Vishnu and that he was well situated himself. But again, in thinking for the benefit of other people, he brought this up. So in a greater sense, we know the background, and we'll read later in this story that this is all an arrangement for Chitraketu to come back to Godhead earlier. That Krishna actually wanted Chitraketu to come back immediately, so he arranged his situation that he would be cursed by Parvati. So we see later on that Parvati was saying that she was saying that her husband was being criticized. And so she came to, in that mood, she chastises later on, she chastises Chitraketu and saying that you think that you're a great devotee, you've been blessed by Vishnu, but why is it that Lord Brahma and the Kumaras and other great people in this assembly, they're not making this observation, they're not voicing this? So it's described that one cannot, even if someone, if you observe something that appears to be a transgression of etiquette by a great personality, that personality still cannot be criticized. This is when one realizes that certain people have inconceivable potency. This inconceivable potency is a very important point, that each individual has a certain amount of potency. We have our intellectual potency, we have our physical potency, we may have financial potency, everyone has their own potency according to their karma. But when dealing with different personalities, we have to recognize that different people have different potencies, and some of the great incarnations, well, not some of the, all the great incarnations, different empowered incarnations, Krishna and his representative have inconceivable potencies. Lord Shiva is not an ordinary person. So recognizing that a powerful person can actually never be criticized. It's for our own benefit. Even if you observe something, by our own discrimination, we may see something and judge something. But it becomes very dangerous to voice that, knowing that, especially with a powerful personality. So it's like the very basic principle of religion, even in Christianity. It's mentioned, judge not, lest you be judged. So there's a difference between discrimination, understanding what is proper and what is not proper, and which we do, that's called intelligence. But being very careful how we apply that intelligence. So the safest position is always to be humble. That Lord Chaitanya said, Srinada Pisunichina Taror Pisushana Amanina Manadina Kirtaniya Siddhahari. The safest position is able to always be able to offer respects to others. If you're able to do respect others, then you'll be able to chant constantly. And if you're chanting constantly, you're in the spiritual world, you're entering the spiritual world. So Shyamasundara Prabhu, who was well known, he was Prabhupada's servant for many years. So he said one of the main things that he learned from Srila Prabhupada, he said Prabhupada taught them there were six types of people. So going from lowest to highest, and I forget the middle two types, but anyway we'll get the two extremes. He said the lowest type of person, he sees a fault in someone, and he makes that very large. That's all he sees. He sees some small transgression, and he identifies that person, oh, that person is just this. He's done that, he's only this. They don't give them any other recognition aside from the fault. Whatever that, they magnify whatever fault that they've observed. The second type of person is that he sees both the good and the bad, but he chooses to ignore the good and still focuses on the bad. Jumping up to the last two people, the two top people, a person will see the good and the bad in the people, and he'll only emphasize the good. He'll give that person the benefit of the doubt, and he'll emphasize the good in that person. And then the topmost person, even he can just find a little tiny bit of good in someone else. Maybe so many other things are not good. But he'll see that good thing and he'll magnify that. That's all he'll see. So that's the first class person. So we saw Prabhupada was like that. That the way he encouraged everyone, he had that. Of course, he was a first class person, no question about that. But this is one of the symptoms, is that whatever he saw in that person, he encouraged that. There's so many stories like that. Just like in Hawaii, he came through Hawaii, he was at the airport. And one of the original devotees is named Aniruddha. Aniruddha was in the beginning in Los Angeles, had done so much service, and he was there with Prabhupada. So years had gone by, he was living in Hawaii, and his sadhana was not so strong, and he's feeling a little embarrassed. But he came to the airport to greet Prabhupada, and he was very shy. He felt a little bad that he hadn't been keeping his standard. But Prabhupada saw him and was immediately happy to see him. He said, in the beginning, you did so much. You helped up so much. So Prabhupada is, one of the symptoms of a devotee is that he's grateful. So Prabhupada was grateful for every little thing we might have done. And that's his magnanimity, his magnanimous nature. It wasn't that, for those of you that didn't get to meet Prabhupada personally, of course you're meeting him through his books, he had that very sweet nature. He was so powerful. He could get up and so empowered. He'd get up and give lecture and be clothed. He must have known thousands of verses. Even now you listen to lectures and he's quoting verses from everywhere. He had such He was such a brilliant speaker and empowered and knowledgeable. But at the same time, he was extremely humble. As a new bhakta, I went to a temple and somehow I got in line as Prabhupada. Whatever temple he was in, he would greet the deities, he would take charanamrita, and then someone would offer him, to wash his hands, just like we do here. And so anyway, he washed his hands, and somehow someone gave me the napkin, the little cloth to give to Prabhupada so he could wash his hands. And to me, I was always in total awe of Prabhupada. Here's this person that when he looked at you, you could see right into your soul and just see you, all of you, and with great compassion and great love. You felt a little shocked. It was like a lighthouse when the beam came and the light hit you. It was like overwhelming brightness. And you could feel that Prabhupada could see within you, and you felt a little naked and embarrassed that he knew every secret, everything about you. But at the same time, he wasn't looking with a judgment. He was looking with compassion and knowing that if you learn to love Krishna, that you'd be completely happy. And that's what you're created to do. That's your purpose in life. And if you just do that, then all problems are solved. That's really the mission of life. So a great personality like that, even being in his presence, you might be, I'm sure you've heard this before, that many devotees, you could be so mental, you're coming to the temple, your mind is giving you trouble, and you're just barely hanging on. But you'd be in Prabhupada's presence, you'd go in Prabhupada's presence, and you'd look around and say, is everything all right? And just immediately everything was fine, everything was all right. So with great devotees, that's why it's said to seek out the saintly people, because their standard of devotion is infectious. And it actually lifts one up and enlivens. So even though Prabhupada was this great personality, continues to be this great personality, is here, guiding us, his disciples, his grand disciples. Still, his mood was very loving and very humble. So when he washed his hands in the Charitamrita, when I offered him the napkin, this is in the midst of all the devotees, he looked at me, he took the napkin and said, thank you very much. And I felt honored to give it to him. I wasn't expecting any thanks, and he was like that. So Prabhupada knew the mind of his disciples and everyone. So that's the sign of a saintly person, extremely humble and concerned for other people. I encourage you to... Our godbrother Siddhanta has Prabhupada memories tapes and series, and these are like chronicles, just like in the Bible. The whole books of the New Testament are the testimonies of the disciples of Jesus, and they were written down. The first one is like 60 years after the appearance of Jesus, and then these were handed down, so people get inspiration from those, even though it's been so many years. So these series of memories of Prabhupada, these are direct disciples giving their most cherished memories and experiences with Prabhupada, that when you can take this appreciation of devotees and understand more about Prabhupada's qualities. So humility is a very important, the crown principle of a real devotee, that they have time for people, they're not so full of themselves that they think that they're in a position now where everyone else has to respect them. As Lord Chaitanya said, if you can able to look at everyone, even a normal person, and respect that person, you're free from that false ego, that ahankara, that separates us from Krishna. It's this feeling of I and mine, this mood of wanting to be separate from Krishna, that Krishna says, okay, if that's what you want, here's the material world, have at it. Try and make yourself the center of creation, and if that makes you happy, then you can do that. But we find that the threefold miseries exist, that it's not our natural position. We're like fish out of water. Being spiritual by nature, we can't be happy out of our element. Our element is the spiritual realm. So being able to understand that that's our real position, our purpose in life, and our mission in life, is part of the process of bhakti yoga, is the main process of bhakti yoga. And as soon as we identify it with something other than ourselves, our real self, which in our real self is being a humble, loving servant of Krishna, As soon as we think we're anything other than that, even if we think that we're brahmachari or sannyasi or grihastha or any other designation, we're actually an illusion. Shishi Gornitai ki jai, Shishi Krishna Balaram ki jai, Shishi Radhashyama Sundar ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So as soon as we designate ourselves as something other than an eternal servant of Krishna, then we're an illusion. That has to be our primary identity. And that's how we relate to other people. That is part of Sambandha Gyan. Sambandha Gyan means understanding our relationship with Krishna. So understanding that Krishna is everything. Krishna is the material nature, he's the spiritual nature, he is the observer, he is everything. We'll talk about that a bit with Lord Brahma's realization also. Understanding in Krishna by his energy pervades everything. Understanding our relationship with everything is part of Sambandha Jnana, which is the first stage of before we begin active service. If we understand we're an eternal servant of Krishna, then we have a duty. And that duty is service. That's Abhideya is moving into to service until that service becomes spontaneous, parojana, the need of the soul is just to constantly serve. But in that beginning stage of understanding the relationship between what is me, what is my relationship with Krishna, Krishna is everything including, he expanded all the living entities, so my relationship with all living entities is important. My relationship with so-called matter is important because actually Krishna is manifested, that's Krishna's energy as well. So how we learn to see everything as belonging to Krishna and using everything in Krishna's service, seeing ourselves as Krishna's servant, the peace formula the Prabhupada gave, Bhaktaram Yagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatvamam Shantam Richati. That Krishna is the proprietor of this whole world and of all planets. He's the enjoyer, the supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices, and he's the best friend of all living entities. And if we can realize that, then we'll know Shanti, we'll have peace of mind. And from that peace of mind, then we'll be able to be a more loving and efficient devotee and servant. So that identity of simply understanding I'm a Krishna's loving servant beyond all else, that beginning stage is very important. And be able to have that sense of awe and reverence before we go to servitorship and friendship. So philosophically we know that going to the higher rasas of being a friend of Krishna, being a parent, being a lover, all those are there, but those are beyond just the state of awe and reverence or neutrality. So devotees don't aspire for neutrality, but all those other higher rasas include neutrality and awe and reverence. So at some point we have to develop at least that first stage of awe and reverence, and that begins with having that feeling towards Guru, that we have to understand to become a genuine humble servant of Guru is the key to advancement in spiritual life. That's only by the blessings of the Guru. When the Guru is pleased, then he grants the visa, he recommends us to Krishna. It's not just by our austerities or our knowledge or our charity, all these corollary principles, devotional life, that automatically a devotee will become austere, he'll become knowledgeable, he'll give charity, he'll do all those things. Those are symptoms. But it's not by those things that we can demand Krishna to liberate us, to make any demands on Krishna. It's, all those things aren't really the main focus. It's if we can actually get the blessings of Guru and pray for the blessings of Srila Prabhupada and our Guru and our line, our Guru Varga, that those blessings, by those blessings, we'll be empowered. By those blessings, everything manifests. So because the Guru is a representative of Krishna, he has inconceivable potencies. He's not on Krishna's level, he doesn't claim to be Krishna. One time, in one of these letters, or it was an interview, I think, someone was writing Prabhupada, and he said, Prabhupada, I have so many problems. I'm really stuck with all these problems. And Prabhupada says, with one kick of my foot, I can release you from all these problems. Just keep chanting, just keep serving. So it's by that grace, it's that by that grace that when you pray to to Krishna himself, to Lord Nityananda, but primarily through Guru, to seek those blessings, and those things happen. Otherwise, if we're thinking that we're the doer, whatever abilities we have, this body that we have is only the grace and only the result of our past activities. And we're thinking, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, Prakachai Kriyamanani, that we're thinking we're doing all this stuff, but we're actually just acting according to the modes of material nature through the body that we have. That body is a gift given by Krishna through the material nature. So our position is, whatever talents we have, whatever bodily constitution we have, whatever abilities we have, we try and offer those to Guru and become of service. So one may be a cook, an administrator, a sweeper, a pot washer, a speaker. It doesn't matter, Prabhupada said, because this is all on the absolute platform. Prabhupada was reading not long ago, Prabhupada said, it doesn't matter what service you're doing. Krishna just wants to see that you're spending all your time serving him. So in the beginning, we're serving according to our nature. We have some inclination, and we should be engaged in that way. Then we gradually can come to the stage where whatever we're asked to do, we'll be able to do that. Sometimes we aren't able to go, we aren't able to do another person's service. As long as we're conditioned, we can't affect to act according, we can't repress our modes of nature. We have to engage those. But as time goes on and one becomes purified and Guru is pleased, then more ability is given. So we're trying to just become a humble servant. And we saw that Prabhupada was a humble servant of his Guru. That to become a master, not that we have an ambition to become a master, but the only way one becomes a master is by becoming a perfect servant. That's the qualification of becoming a master. So Prabhupada was asked, he said, well, when you depart, who will take your place? And he said, I want all of my disciples to become teachers and step into that role and teach others. And the science is, if you know the science of Krishna, that's the definition of becoming a guru. If you know the science of Krishna. So Prabhupada has taught us that science, and it's very simple. Simply engage, chant your rounds, follow the principles, and get inspiration, because ultimately, the process of Krishna consciousness is one of revelation. So Krishna is within the heart of everyone. So we want to come to the point where Krishna is inspiring us directly from the heart. That's the stage where Prabhupada says, that, like it says in Bhagavad Gita, that when the mind is conquered, the super soul is already reached. So Prabhupada said that calming the mind through chanting, through service, that the mind becomes purified, that if we're engaged in our regular service, then the mind will become conquered and become a friend instead of an enemy. The enemy side of the mind is always wanting to offer suggestions that aren't for our benefit. It's actually, but when the mind is controlled, then the mind becomes a friend, and then the mind will actually engage us, won't give us so much trouble. When the intelligence is guiding the activities of the mind is just accepting and rejecting, saying, mind is yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. This will give me pleasure, this will give me pain. That person's my friend, that person's my enemy. All these artificial considerations have to do with the body and what we think will please our body and ourselves. But we aren't that body, we aren't that mind. So by intelligence becoming strong, the mind becomes a friend. And when the mind is controlled, the super soul is reached, then we take direction from the super soul for our service, and it becomes spontaneous. But because we aren't on that platform yet, we're still influenced by the mind. We get the instruction from the super soul, also from without, from Guru and the Shastra and Sadhu. So because we're not tuned into directly with Krishna yet, Krishna has his external representatives. So the Guru is giving the same instruction that Krishna is giving. So Krishna says, think of me, worship me, become my devotees, always think of me, and surely you will come to me. So that's what we're wanting. Prabhupada said, had a nice quote, he was saying how, you know, we're all looking for some friend in this world. We're all looking, because it's natural that we're persons and we relate to other people, and in the spiritual world there are so many nice people, and Krishna is the center, but we're engaging with other devotees as well. But he said, ultimately, Krishna, to understand Krishna as a friend, he said, you have a very nice friend within you. So you're looking for someone to talk with, to joke with, to laugh with. Krishna is there for that purpose. So he said, you should understand, whether you're a boy or a girl, Krishna is within your heart, and he's the a very nice friend. And you can joke, and you should have a running dialogue. You should have, actually, we need to have a running dialogue with Krishna because he's there. And it's as with the deities as well. The Prabhupada said the deity is there for you to talk with, tell your problems, ask for blessings, reveal your mind and heart. Said when you become purified, also the deity will talk back with you. So you can see, Prabhupada also spoke with the deities. And there was a famous story. It was Surabhi Swami, who is the architect of the temple here. So he recently went back to join Prabhupada's seva. But he was an artist. He was a very, very nice devotee from Holland. So he was kind of he was really more of an artist than anything. But he came to Bombay, and at the time, Prabhupada wanted to build a temple in Bombay and also Vrindavan. So he empowered Surabhi, who later became Surabhi Swami. He empowered him and said, okay, you make a design. Design the temple. We want to design Bombay, we want to design Vrindavan. So Surabhi actually had no experience as an architect. But he was a good artist, and so he started coming up with some ideas, and he studied different types of architecture. And so he started submitting the drawings. And then Prabhupada said, okay, you've made these nice drawings. You're going to be in charge of building the temple. So he was a little bit flabbergasted because he had no experience in any type of architecture. But he was sincere, and Prabhupada asked him to do it. And with the order comes the potency to do the service. So he started, and he was here, and they designed Bombay Temple. And most everyone knows the story of the struggle of that temple. And also Vrindavan. Temple grounds, people thought when Prabhupada purchased this temple, the land here, all the people down in Lohi Bazaar said, nah, no one's going to come out to that. That's too far away from town. That place is too remote. This is not a good idea to buy this land. But Prabhupada knew. This is Raman Reti. This is Krishna and Balaram had their pastimes. So Surabhi was here, and amidst the heat, and amidst... right now, Vrindavan is very luxurious as far as the material facilities. So devotees, they were given this duty and empowered. There was nothing here. If you had to use the bathroom, you would run across the road and jump over the fence. And so it was starting from scratch. And then as Westerners dealing with local people, it was very something to learn. It's not easy. It was a great struggle, but through that struggle was great purification and an amazing temple is here that we've inherited from by Prabhupada's grace and from the effort of these early devotees. And it's so wonderful that now the present day devotees that are maintaining the temple and looking after and expanding, we owe a great debt to them, because it's not easy to serve in the Dham. Because there's such a heavy place for potential for great spiritual advancement, but that potential for, if one makes is careless, the reaction also comes swiftly. So we see, we're not supposed to glorify someone by name in front of the deities, but our present temple president, I have great respect and admiration for the job he's doing, because I think it's not an easy thing. And if we look at the history of this temple, there's been probably 20, 24 temple presidents. There's been, if not more, because it was a job that was so demanding. So for someone to steadily remain in that position, all respects. So Lord Brahma, actually, his position was... when he wanted to create, we know the story of Lord Brahma. Changing gears here a little bit, but Lord Brahma had this desire to do this, to his duty to populate the universe, or to create the universe as a secondary creator. So When he came down the lotus leaf, he was sitting on the lotus flower, and we know the story. He came down, he saw there was just the ocean. He was a little bewildered. He went back to on top of the lotus, and he heard the words, tapa, do austerity. If you want to do the service, then you must do austerity. So Lord Brahma meditated for 100 years. He did this austerity of controlling his mind. And then Krishna revealed himself in the spiritual world to him. And again, along those lines of being inspired from within, that Prabhupada mentions many places, if we do genuinely do our service and try and chant our rounds without offense, then we'll get inspiration from within. We'll get inspiration from the super soul, from the super soul, and guidance from within. So eventually, this comes to the point of through our sadhana, we'll have spontaneous, our service will become spontaneous, we'll get a taste. It'll be something that we don't, it's not a struggle so much, but we don't want to do anything else. So Lord Brahma got the vision of the spiritual world, and he gave us all the shlokas in Brahma Samhita, all the glorifications of the beauty of Krishna. Prabhupada quoted Brahma Samhita quite often. One of the verses, Adoita Machuti Manadi Manantarupa Madhyang Purana Purushang Navayoganam Chavide Shudulabha Madhulabha Matvavakto Govinda Madhi Purushang Tamahamajami. That this divine spiritual realm is actually inaccessible through the Vedas. It's just not by the rules and regulations of the Vedas that, and knowing the Vedas, that you can actually get pure realization, but it's by unalloyed devotion of the soul. The Vedas are there for guidance. Just like one can read medical books, but no one becomes a doctor just by reading medical books. One has to actually have tutelage from experienced doctors. One has to learn from people that know the science. It's not just by book knowledge, even though book knowledge is valuable. So Prabhupada would also used to quote this, Premanjana Chrit Bhakti Vilochanena Santasadeva Hridayesha Vukanti Shama Sundaram Chintyagana Surupam Govinda Maripurusham Tamaham Bhajami. That Krishna is visible in the heart by one whose eyes are smeared with a salve of love. So this idea of, you know, we're doing our service to get back to our natural position, that's the purpose of life. We were at the Bhaktivedanta Institute, had a seminar at the College of Engineering, and the topic of the seminar was the origin of life, its life's meaning and purpose. So, of course, this is Prabhupada wanted actually this college preaching because the origin of life is a big question. There's so many speculations. We have our own understanding of the origin of life that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that all species of life are made possible by the material nature as the mother, and I am the seed-giving father. So we see in our own life, how was our own life created? By the combination of mother and father. So going back in a very grand scale, the combination of Krishna giving as a seed-giving father with material nature makes life possible on this earth. But scientists, they're not understanding the inconceivable potency of the Lord. They're looking to explain, well, how did this happen? Was it electricity? Was somehow the elements were created from there was a big bang and all the things were set into motion, but they have no explanation of where the ingredients for the big bang came from. To have an explosion, you have to have some material that explodes. Well, they're assuming the material is already there. Where did that come from? Well, there's no explanation. So one can travel at the speed of mind for millions of years but cannot approach the lotus feet to understand this material creation, which is endlessly mutable. It's just a distraction. So trying to have all knowledge of how this material world works, it comes to a point, especially for a devotee, where they're not just trying to gain knowledge. Because the conclusion of all knowledge, Krishna says, of all the Vedas, I'm to be known. We're giving so much knowledge, and Vedic knowledge is there for people on different levels of different desires. So if a person wants to go to heavenly planets, the Vedas will tell you how. But ultimately, Krishna says, by all the Vedas, I'm to be known. And our relationship with him is one of service. So we have a tendency to still think in terms of external social etiquette, and all those things are there and should be properly done, but ultimately, trying to advance through a kind of like a social understanding is really not the essence of Vedic life. The essence is just become a humble servant. So at the end of Brahma Samhita, there's an Lord Brahma, I like this verse. It says, Dharma nanyan prajagya mamikam bhaja vishvashan yadrishi yadrishi shada siddhir bhavati tadrishi kurvan narantaram karma lokiyam anavartate tanayava karmana dhyayam mam param bhaktam ichchati. Lord Brahma, Lord Krishna is actually telling Brahma, he says, abandoning all meritorious performances, serve me with faith. The realization will correspond to the nature of one's faith. The people of the world act ceaselessly in pursuance of some ideal. By meditating upon me by means of those deeds, one will attain devotion characterized by love in the shape of the supreme service. So this is similar to when Krishna says, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja, that just abandon all meritorious performances, trying to be pious, because a meritorious performance means it's a karmic mentality. It's a very calculative mentality. If I'll do this, I'll get something good in the future. Krishna says, go beyond that. And that your realization, and the realization we're looking for is our relationship with Krishna, who is the source of all happiness and knowledge and love. To develop that relationship, that's the purpose of all of our spiritual endeavor. So rather than trying to have some karmic ideal, do some bargain, well, if Krishna, if I'm going to do this for you, so you'll do this for me. Give up all that businessman mentality and have a pure faith that Krishna will, by our service and our love, Krishna will always take care of us and our best, he has our best interest at heart. He can make a plan for us better than any plan we could ever make for ourselves. And he says here that he advises Brahma that your realization will correspond to the nature of your faith. So Prabhupada always had said, we don't have blind faith, we have faith based on our experience. And as I think that we all have experienced that when we take a leap of faith, we put ourselves out in some level of faith, Krishna is always there to catch us. Sometimes our ego just says, that's enough, I'm not surrendering anymore, I've done enough. you kind of think like we've hit a wall. It's just like the mind or the heart just says, no, we have that hard-heartedness, at least I can speak for myself. But our experience is every time we take that leap of faith and we started chanting, we started coming to the temple, we started following, we surrendered to the program, that faith that Krishna always reciprocates. So so we're looking for the realization of Krishna as the dearmost friend and developing that as time goes on according to the specific rasa one has that's revealed over time by blessings of Guru. But just to take that step, have that faith, and your realization will correspond to the nature of your faith. You can't fool Krishna. You can dress as a devotee, you can put on neck beads, you can do all the external things, and those are good. But Krishna knows the heart. Krishna knows the real desire and the mentality of each devotee. So Prabhupada mentions that there's two things. One has to give up this trying to enjoy separately from Krishna, and also give up this weakness of heart. The weakness of heart is still whatever envy there is that one wants to be the supreme. One has some hesitancy to surrender and to recognize that our real nature is to reunite with the supreme. Because all the knowledge, everything that we need to do is already within us. And if it's the guru and shastra and sadhu are there to remind us of what we already know, that our real connection is to be a loving servant of the supreme. So with sangha, with the practice of bhakti, with an association of devotees, we can remind each other that this is our goal. Prabhupada said if he had one pure devotee, his mission would be accomplished. We're in a missionary mood to try and help others because that's how we purify ourselves. We shouldn't think that, oh, I'm going to go out and save all the fallen when we're still struggling with our own mind and senses. So it's said that it's important to try and do, actually, a real sadhu His only interest is to help other people. His only interest is to see that person reconnect with Krishna. That is really yoga, to reconnect with the Supreme Lord. And that's the mission of a sadhu. He only exists to try and help other people get back to Godhead. So that is the ideal sadhu. But for us as practicing, Prabhupada also mentioned that save yourself first. You have to actually be true to your own nature and want to save yourself first. And in relation to this, I'll finish by saying that Chitraketu, even though he was not actually criticizing Lord Shiva, he was concerned about other people who might, but yet it caused him to voice this concern. And ultimately this was the Leela, and then he would be cursed by Parvati to become Ritrasura and to go back to Godhead earlier, so that was all done. But as far as a lesson for us, sometimes it's better just to, rather than thinking, oh, I better criticize that person so other people won't be misled, better just to save yourself and not criticize anyone. Because there's a, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that there's a, if one is criticizing other people, then they themselves, or if one is trying to correct other people, then that person themselves needs to be corrected, because other people can be corrected by other means. Of course, there are exceptions. If you're a guru, you're correcting your student, that's one thing. Or if you're have a job and you're trying to, you're not correcting them out of false ego, but you're, as an administrator, you're telling people how to do things rightly, that's not criticism. That is instruction, and it's not done out of envy. So we should want to save ourselves, be very, very hesitant to be critical of anyone else. One time, I'll finish up on this, as one of Prabhupada's disciples, they went to see one of, anyway, I'll leave the story for another time. The time is up, it's a long story. Anyway, thank you very much for your Sangha. Thank all the devotees of the temple that are doing such a wonderful job. All the pilgrims, to see all the devotees here is very inspiring. And if there's anything anyone would like to add, please. You want to use this? Oh, there you go.
And really helped me. I have a question. Like you mentioned, there are six kinds of people. And basically, day to day life, what I'm studying, two levels, I'm working corporate and in family level. I find that, when I'm working, people are
Are you talking about just listening to criticism, or criticism of you, or criticism in having to be in an environment with other people are criticizing, or when people are criticizing you? Which Krishna says, of secret things, I am silence. So I noticed that I had the good fortune to spend time with Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj since we were young. And I would see him. And people would come to him and criticize so many devotees, even when we were traveling in France after the administration left. And he would listen to everybody very attentively, but then he would just remain silent. And one devotee told me, he says, "I'm so frustrated with Maharaj, we can't get him to criticize anybody." And so sometimes you can remain silent, just appreciate and listen. If you have to respond in a job situation or something, just think many times, think three times before you respond. That you don't want to just jump on the criticizing bandwagon. It's easy to do. Especially with devotees, I also find that you can start talking about this one or that one, and you just have to somehow control the mind a little bit and just practice at it. I don't have any other suggestion if you're in that situation, you can't do anything about it. You just have to try and minimize and make your criticism valid. You know, if it's not done out of envy, if it's done that this trying to help, you're actually trying to help someone improve, then it's not just backbiting. You know, or you can say, you know, if someone's criticizing a coworker and you say, yeah, well, he's doing a really good job in these other areas. So maybe you can instruct that, okay, maybe he has a little fault here, but we really appreciate the other things that he or she does for us. So also ask them to tolerate. Because then there's no perfection in this world. It's not a perfect world, so it's a chance to practice some tolerance. I don't know if that helps, but...
Like you mentioned about being silent, but how was it a family? Did family member bless you?
Yeah, well, you know that sometimes you just have to teach by example. If they can't bait you into an argument, you know, just refuse to go there. If they just want to argue for the sake of arguing or criticize, if you don't answer that, what can they do? You know? They can understand that you don't want to talk about this, it's not going to, you know? Anger is like sense gratification. You're angry about somebody, you want to criticize, you're venting all this. And sometimes you need a friend to vent to. Sometimes you just have to listen, and then people get it off their chest, and, you know, they're able to move on instead of holding all this pent-up anger and frustration. Sometimes people need to just get it out. And be a friend, and you can listen to that. But you don't have to, you know, perpetuate the misery, you know. People think that we have a tendency to think that we're victims, but there's no victims in this world. You know, people want to complain, oh, they did this to me, that's so unfair. You know, a devotee out of humility say, okay, this person is just an instrument for my karma. I may not be happy with what's going on, but I should just let it go, try and tolerate, and just get beyond and move forward. You know, if we hold all these grudges, we hold all this venom in our heart, it just poisons ourselves. You know, so this criticism is, people are criticizing, think it's you know, when we can avoid it, it's better. That's a symptom of a real advanced devotee. They have no tendency to criticize everyone. So if we cut back our own, then people can see, okay, he's not going to go there. Maybe they'll give up. Maybe you can teach them that. Very well. Anything else? The Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Shri Radha Shyama Sundara ki jai.